Hi, guys. Thank you very much. My name's Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group. It's good to be back here. Paul said nobody was going to be here. He had explained all 12 steps to y'all and took a couple of shots, did he? You know? That's okay. I love Paul. He's a very good friend of mine. I asked him to come in. And I want you guys to have a varied, view of what this thing is all about. You know, we love each other very much, and we talk to each other all the time and share ideas and things like that. So I'm glad he was here. He's very funny. Has a lot of good things to say. So I'm glad he was able to take over. I had made a previous commitment over at Calvary Chapel Church through their Celebrate Recovery deal, which is a scripture-based 12-step program. So I was doing the four-step down there, and I had made that commitment before this one, so I really needed to honor it. So please forgive me for, taking that, but we'll start off again maybe with the fifth step and try to see where it goes from there. Just share a little bit about my experience. I haven't found necessary to have a drink since January 25th, 1981, and I've been doing this for a while, and all I can really share is my experience and what I've noticed about this thing. I don't do it perfectly. You know, I want to be able to say like a cliche-ish thing, like I do the best I can or the best I know how to do, but sometimes I probably do the second best or the third best, and I'm just a human being. Sometimes I'm lazy, and you know, I'm very much involved in this deal now after the number of years I've been involved in it. I've learned certain things about myself, certain things about this program. I certainly don't know everything. I don't know that much, but I know a few things. What's interesting is I've come to, somewhere along the line, I decided that my best thinking got me into this deal, and I can't trust my thinking. Now, up until coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, I thought I was smarter than anybody else on the planet, especially me, in every possible way. So chances were I wasn't going to listen to you or listen to anybody else except my own brain, because things made sense to me. But, you know, when you can't stop drinking, and this is Alcoholics Anonymous, so I'm probably not the only one who got here because they couldn't stop drinking. When alcohol beats the living crap out of you and forces you on your knees, humbles you to come into Alcoholics Anonymous, at least if you're an alcoholic like me, for a nanosecond, you become like open-minded to the possibility that you're screwed and your life is unmanageable and you really need help. So you ask for help. You know, actually, in a very strange sense, I think it's a lot easier for a guy to take the fifth step, like on his first day, than after a few months. You know, now, of course, we don't really take the fifth step because we haven't taken the fourth step, and the fourth step because there's a certain way, because the fifth step is not about being a thumb-sucking crybaby. It's not about whining or crying or complaining or bitching or moaning. It's about there's a specific idea as to how you talk about things and how you analyze things and things you talk about in the fifth step. But what I guess I'm saying is when you first got in, at least when I first came in, I was willing to talk to anybody about anything that I thought was important, just to whine and cry and because I was scared and everything like that. But, you know, one of the things that I learned because my sponsor beat it into me, and I think I still have that. I hope I still have that. I hope I have it until the day I die, is a healthy disrespect for my own thinking. No matter what I'm doing, no matter how many, if I get a pat on the back, no matter what's going on with my life, I just don't necessarily trust me totally, you know, because, you know, I'm an alcoholic, I'm crazy, you know, and my best thinking got me in here, and, you know, God bless if I'm really sure about something, I better bounce it off of other people, and I better get involved with people. So what I've come to realize is that there's certain books. There's other people that I depend upon, that I listen to, not necessarily everybody. There's certain books I depend upon in AA, like the Big Book and the 12 and 12 and Dr. Bob and Good Old Timers. You all know I'm like into the Bible. I do that kind of stuff, Bible study. And I hang around men who are older than me. You know, my sponsor's 83. He's got 56 years. I have another man. And, you know, when you hang around guys like that, you know, my sponsor, John, you know, they lead you to other guys. So John hangs around with Kerry, you know, and Kerry's got like about 85, and, you know, he's been a Baptist preacher for 65 years, and he hangs around with somebody else. So I'm always hanging around with men that are around, you know, 20, 30 years older than me, which is a good thing for somebody like me. So I don't want to think that I'm the smartest guy in the room. I want to get my ideas from other people. And that's one of the great things about Alcoholics Anonymous. We all sort of mix together and we share ideas. So I happen to be looking at there's always, whenever I talk about the fifth step, and I may or may not get into the actual mechanics of it. I don't necessarily think that's important or necessary at this point, except maybe to share what my experience is with it, my own personal experience. But when I think about the fifth step, there is always an aspect of it that always interests me whenever I talk about it. And the aspect is something that's talked about in the Big Book at different places. And I want to read a couple of things from the Big Book. And I'm going to start off with something envisioned for you. And I'm going to read it. And it says, on page 151, it says, now and then, a serious drinker, being dry at the moment, says, I don't miss it at all. I feel better, I'm working better, I'm having a better time. As ex-problem drinkers, we smile at such Sally. We know our friend is like a boy whistling in the dark to keep up his spirits. He fools himself. Inwardly, he would give anything to take half a dozen drinks and get away with them. He will presently try the old game again, for he isn't happy about his sobriety. He cannot picture life without alcohol. Someday he will be unable to imagine life either with alcohol or without alcohol. Then he will know loneliness such as few do. Then he will know loneliness such as few do. Now, here's the deal. This is our basic text. We may not agree on a bunch of things, but the way I read this book is the one thing we agree on is the stuff in this basic text. And as a matter of fact, I feel so strongly that the stuff in this basic text, you know, there's a part in this text, you know about that, back in when they talk about the third step, if I can get back there, where it says this, and I read it all the time, selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. We step on the toes of our fellows, and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation, but we have invariably found that sometime in the past, we have made decisions based on self, which later place us in a position to be hurt. When it describes what our real disease is all about, then it says this, so our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic, here's another statement they make, an alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot. In other words, I came in here when I was 31 years old. Up until the time I came in here, maybe a little time after that, I thought my problem was you. No, listen, I'm probably not the only one here. I don't think I'm here. Up until the time I came in here, and for quite a long time after, maybe what, 10 years? I mean, how long do people go to, you go to discussion meetings? I don't go to a lot of discussion meetings, but you go to discussion meetings. You ever go to discussion meetings and people are complaining about their parents? You ever go to discussion meetings where people are complaining about their boss? You ever go to discussion meetings where an alcoholic will be complaining? You ever go to a discussion meeting where an alcoholic will be complaining about something that's going on in the world or something that's going on in their life? They're not complaining about themselves. They're complaining about something that's bothering them, that's screwing them up, something that's happening, they're complaining. And sometimes they have what, like 1 year, 2 years, 18 months, 5 years, 6 years? So this concept that our problems have to do with other people and outside of ourselves really sort of, it sort of like drags on even after we come into Alcoholics Anonymous. It's pretty strong. You ever try to go up to one of these people who's complaining about his mother, father, his sister, and aunt and everything and say, well, that's not your problem? And see what happens after that? They don't like it that much, do they? It's like, why don't you mind your own business? Why don't you take your own inventory? You don't know what you're talking about. You don't understand. You get all that flack, right? Somewhere, what about 20, 30 years, if they're still sober, they sort of like get that deal. And that's when the complaining stops, right? Somewhere, even after the fourth step, there could be still a little complaint. That's when you get a new perspective. So here's what it says. It says, so our troubles, we think, this is a statement, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves. Anybody here have any troubles? Well, they're basically of your own making. they arise of yourselves. I'm not saying that's always the case or whatever it is, but probably that's true if that's what it says in here. But this is what it says right after that. And the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot. This place is filled with alcoholics. I don't know, is this close to me? Are you guys alcoholics? So, you know, what the book says, this isn't me. I mean, don't get mad at me. You write New York. Tell them to take this out. It says what it says, if you're an alcoholic and you're in here and you ascribe to AA, that you're an extreme example of self-will run riot. Now, there may be people in here that don't think that's true. But that doesn't mean you're not. As a matter of fact, the book covers that. It says, though he usually doesn't think so. It says it right there. So if you say to me, I'm wrong, I say, you see, that proves it. They're right about you. So what I guess I'm trying to say is, what I've decided to do is decide that this book is right rather than my own thinking. Because when I followed my own thinking, I was like in the shit house. But when I followed this book, things ended up okay. So I sort of like follow this book. And this is what it says. It says, this is what this book says. It says all sorts of strange things. Here's one of the things it says. And this, I think, has something to do with the fifth step. And that's why I think it's important. I want to sort of like go into this. It says on page 57 of the fifth step, of the 12 and 12, it says, almost without exception, alcoholics are tortured by loneliness. That's what it says. It says, almost without exception, alcoholics are tortured by loneliness. So, we got any alcoholics in here? See, you're tortured by loneliness. That's part of your problem. You're tortured by loneliness. It doesn't matter that you don't think so. You understand what I'm saying? Because the book says you're tortured by loneliness. I'm tortured by loneliness. You see, most of the time we don't realize we're tortured by loneliness because when you've been lonely and alone and out there and all by yourself, your entire life, you understand? You don't know you're tortured by loneliness. You just know this is just the way you feel. This is just the way, this is when you always feel lonely, you don't feel lonely, you just feel the way you feel. Because you don't know what it's like not to feel lonely. It's like when you're in bondage, you know what I mean? When you're in bondage and you're not free, you don't know what it's like to feel free until the day comes when you're free. When you're constantly worried and you're filled with anxiety your entire life, worrying about something, always trying to control things and worried about something, you don't realize that you're filled with anxiety because that's just the way you feel until one day comes along and you're 20 years sober and you stop worrying and all of a sudden you're free of the worry and you may even forget, man, I used to worry about it. And one day you're at a meeting and some guy with 1 year stands up and starts talking or starts sharing about what he's going through and all of a sudden it clicks, man, I used to be like that. And you forgot that it used to be that way. That's why newcomers are so important. Because when you get free of worry, when you get free of loneliness, when you've been free of that, because it says, what does it say in the book? You know what it says? Not only does it say men and women drink because they like the effect they like the effect of alcohol, we're restless, irritable, and discontent unless we can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. It also says our alcoholic life seems the only normal one. So you got to understand, no matter how insane we are, no matter how lonely we are, no matter how anxious we are, to us, that feels normal. Sane living, feeling good about yourself all the time, not worrying, feels weird. Worrying all the time, being scared all the time, being on edge all the time, being pissed off all the time, feels comfortable to us. When we don't feel like that, we go to our sponsors because we think something's wrong. Okay, so I mean that's just the deal. That's the way sobriety doesn't feel good to us. What feels natural to us is not being sober. So apparently, loneliness has a lot to do with this stuff. So I was thinking about what is the fifth step? What is talking with the, you know, and apparently this fifth step has some, because they talk about loneliness all through this fifth step. They talk about connection and apparently it says in the big book, and as you know, my whole deal is it's all about a relationship with God. Apparently, this inability to have fellowship with another human being and this loneliness, apparently, is one of these things that's an obstacle to allowing the Spirit of God to come in and change you and transform you. Because it says in the, ultimately, we're going to get to the promises. And when you get to the promises, it's going to say things like you're going to know new freedom. It's going to say things like you're going to know new happiness. It's going to say things like you're going to lose fear of people and you're going to lose fear of economic insecurity. It's not going to say that you're going to get rich or economically secure. I mean, that's what I said, that old line I said to Ray O'Keefe. I said, when am I going to be economically secure? He said, never. I said, what do you mean? The book says I'm going to lose economic insecurity. He says, it doesn't say that, Russell. He says, read it again. It says you're going to lose the fear of economic insecurity. You'll always be broke, but it won't bother you. Well, all these things are going to happen to you, but you know what the big book says? This isn't me talking. You know, don't walk out there and say, you know what Russell said? You know, Russell, this isn't me. This is our basic text. I mean, I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know what you're in. I mean, I know you're here now. You know, it's like I said, just because you're standing in the garage doesn't mean you're a Chevy. You know what I mean? Just because you're here. I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. This is our basic text. Well, what this basic text says, because I also want to connect the dots with the God thing, but this basic text says is after all these incredible things happen to you, remarkable things happen to you, where you're going to be amazed before you're halfway done, this is what it says. It says, God is doing for us what we can't do for ourselves. It says, God is doing for us. So, you know, if you're trying to do it for yourself, it ain't going to happen. It says, God is doing for us what you can. He's like big time in here. He's big time in the fifth step. I'm going to read you some things. He's like a big deal in the fifth step. You know, doing the fifth step without God is, you know, it's like, I mean, I don't know how to describe it. I know how to describe it, but the way I describe it would be obscene. So I'm not going to do it that way. I mean, it's like dry. It's like missing the magic ingredient. You know, that's what the fifth step is all about. It's about getting closer to him, because it says in the book, God is doing for us, he's going to do for us. And here's what it says in chapter 6, into action, right before the fifth step. It says, having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We've been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator. That's what it says we've been trying. Did you know you were trying to? You thought you were trying to stay away from the drink. You thought you were trying to get psychologically fit or smarter, or stay sober, or pick up another chip, or stuff. You thought that's what you were doing. You know, later on in the book, it says, see to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. Did you know what they said there? It says, having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and discover the obstacles in our path. Did you know that's what you were doing? That's what you're doing here tonight, whether you know it or not. Did you know later on in the book, and when they talk about working with others, it says the following in working with others, and I know you've heard this before many times. Let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless he has his family back. You ever hear an alcoholic's name say, "I need to get my job back"? You ever hear an alcoholic say, "I need a job"? You ever see an alcoholic saying, "I need a car"? You ever see an alcoholic say, "I need to get my wife back"? You ever hear an alcoholic say, you know, when you're talking about sobriety, "I need this, I need to get that, I need a place to stay, I need this, I need that"? You've probably said that a couple times. "I need this, I need that. In order to do this, I need this." You know what the book says? This ain't me. Don't report me on this. I'm just reading the book. It says, let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless he gets his family back. Well, you might as well fill in anything of that. Unless he gets his car back, unless he gets his job back. Let no alcoholic say that. You know what that means? That means if I sponsor you and you say that, I can't let you say that. What's so funny? You don't understand that? That means that if you come up to me and you say, "I have to have my family back," and said, "I don't want to hear that bullshit." You don't understand that? I mean, this actually gives you a key as to how to work with people. Did you know that? This is instructions. This is an instruction manual. You say, "Well, how am I going to work with a newcomer? I need to get my family back." That's a bunch of bullshit. You don't need your family. "I need to get my wife back." That's a bunch of crap. That's what your brain's telling you. You're crazy. "I'm crazy. What do you mean I'm crazy?" I says, "Look, it says right here. Let no alcoholic say." You're training crazy people. that are trying to kill themselves, whose brains are ganging up in them and telling them bullshit that are going to kill them and drive them out to drink again. You're training these people. This is the training manual. It's telling you all about your brain and all about yourself. The sooner you learn about your brain, the sooner you accept this book and what's in this book, the weller you'll be and the better able you'll be able to handle other people. And it's right there in front of you. And you don't even see it. You know, what do you say? But we let these people drone on and go to discussion and talk about all this stuff because, you know, we want to be tolerant and not hurt their feelings. And the book says, let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless he has his family back. How about this? It says, he clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Well, you know, if they want to be a little bit vulgar, you know what they're really saying. They're saying bullshit. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply, and you can fill in any material thing, any pelf thing, girl or no girl, boy or no boy, money or no money, you can fill into anything. We learn this truth. We simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence on God. And then it says here, let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless he gets his family back. This just isn't so. In some cases, the wife will never come back for one reason or another. Remind the prospect that his recovery is not dependent upon people. It is dependent upon his relationship with God. It says, remind him. As a matter of fact, later on it says, burn the idea into the alcoholic's mind. If you're not reminding him of that, if you're not burning the idea into his mind, if you're not constantly telling him that and not letting him get away with his crazy thinking, you're a lousy sponsor. You're not doing what this book is telling you to do. You're just trying to be like a nice guy and a friend and let him rattle on. But you're not teaching him this thing. How many alcoholics do you think there are that are sober and Alcoholics Anonymous that are dry today, picking up chips and everything, that don't realize that this is the program of recovery? How many people do you think, you know, you go to discussions meetings, you hear what they say at discussion meetings. How many people do you think that actually don't even realize that the program of recovery is not about complaining about stuff? You know, it's not about that deal. It's about this thing. And so, now that I've read that to you, then it says, we go back here, having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and discover the obstacles in our path. You understand? We're trying to get a new relationship. We're trying to discover the obstacles in our path. This book is consistent all the way through to the very end where it says, see to it your relationship with Him. It's all about the relationship with God. It's all about getting rid of those obstacles. It's not about being smarter. It's not about being, you know, emotionally better. It's not about, you know, clearing. It's not about making money or getting your stuff back. It's about having a better relationship with God. So apparently, let's look at the big picture. This loneliness thing and this communication thing and the fifth step thing has something about your communication with God. Your relationship with God has something. It has something to do with your having a better relationship with God, which allows the power to come in so that you're able to change. So that's the bottom line. That's the end result, okay? Now, you know, I'm sort of thinking about this, and I don't know the deal, but, you know, I was thinking about why does this, and then it goes on in the 12 and 12, it says this other thing right here. All of our 12 steps ask us to go contrary to our natural desires. They all deflate our egos. They all puncture or deflate our egos. When it comes to ego deflation, few steps are harder to take than five, but scarcely any step is more necessary to long-time sobriety and peace of mind than this one, deflating our egos. And then you link this up later on with the seventh step where they say the way we get a new perspective is by repeated, you ready for this, humiliations. So somehow, and the repeated humiliations and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency. That's how we get a new... So somehow, being humiliated, having our self-sufficiency crushed, okay, getting humbled has something to do with getting rid of this obstacle, which has to do with somehow a lack of humility, which is sort of connected to our loneliness. Our loneliness somehow. So what's that all about? So here's what I'm thinking about this. And I don't know. You ought to think about it yourself, maybe. I'm thinking I don't like to be hurt. I'm thinking I don't like to be hurt. You like to be hurt? You like to be hurt? Would you like that, to be hurt in front of people? Would you like to be humiliated in front of a crowd or hurt in front of people? I don't want to get hurt. I don't want anybody to hurt me. You know, I'm scared of being, I'm thinking there's a possibility, I'll admit it in front of you. I'm scared of being hurt. Now, I don't know what would hurt you. What would hurt me is if people were laughing at me. I don't want people to laugh at me. I don't want people to make fun of me. See, I'm not as strong as you guys. I want people to like me. I want people to accept me. I want people to think that I'm a good guy. I don't want people to laugh at me. Now, I know you guys don't worry about stuff like that. Because you're obviously much stronger alcoholics than me. But I think that if you're an alcoholic, you know, I'll tell you this. I think possibly if you're even a human being, but specifically I'm talking about alcoholics. I think if you're an alcoholic, without even knowing it, part and parcel of this loneliness, this whole loneliness deal, I think this loneliness deal is a symptom of somebody who's scared of people and scared of their judgment and scared of getting close to people and scared of people finding out what's really going on in their mind. And scared of really letting people know who they are because they're scared that people will make fun of them and laugh at them and call them stupid and judge them and not associate with them and ostracize them. Now, once again, I'm not talking about you guys. You understand? So I don't want you guys to get nervous or anything. I'm talking about a guy like me. And so I'm reminded about that story. I may have told this to you before here, but it's worth telling again about that baseball field thing, which was a true thing that happened to me. And I guess it's the best sort of explanation of something like that happened to me that I still remember today when I was 10 years old. And we had the two captains, and they were choosing up sides in Great Neck, New York. And there was Fred and Joe, the two best athletes, and I was always the worst athlete. And we had like about 10 or 15 guys, 20 guys, in the middle of the baseball field, and they were choosing up sides. And Joe would pick one guy, and when you pick somebody, what happens is that guy you pick goes over to the captain, you understand? And then Charlie would pick another guy, and that guy he picked would go over to the captain. Has anybody done this deal? The kids probably do it today, okay? And what happens is they're picking people. I'll take Joe, I'll take Charlie. The group in the middle is getting smaller and smaller. And I'm the worst athlete there. And it seems to me like I was always picked last. You know, I can't think of anything that's more humiliating than to be picked last in front of a group of kids. And so as the group is getting smaller and smaller, I'm praying. I don't even know whether I believe in God, but I'm praying. I'm praying for help anywhere. I'm desperate. And you know what I'm praying? I swear, this is what I'm praying. I'm praying that I get picked second to last. Trust me on this, because I've been there. Second to last is safe. Nobody laughs at second to last. For me to be picked second to last is like winning the Oscar. You know what I mean? It's like winning the Pulitzer Prize. And every once in a while, I'd be picked second to last. I just didn't want to be the guy they hated the most. But it seems to me, most of the time, I would be picked last. When you're picked last, you're in the middle of the field. The rest of the team and the guys are on both sides with the captains, and you're all alone, and you're out there, and you're naked to the world. And they're all laughing at you, and they're saying things like this. Oh, do we have to pick them? Do we have to take... In other words, they would rather... They're announcing the world, they'd rather play with one less than to have you on the team. and you're there, and I don't know about you, and I don't know if you've ever been in this situation, and I praise God. I praise God now. I didn't know that now. That's why trials are so important. For allowing me to be in that position, for allowing me to go through that trial so I can, with confidence and through experience, you know what they say, we all have opinions. You know, everybody has an opinion, but when a man with experience meets a man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money, and the man with the money will have walked away with an experience. There's nothing like experience. I'm so thankful now that I had that experience so I can hearken back to that and see exactly what hurts like that and things like that do to me and how I react as an alcoholic, as a human being, and what it does to me as far as separating me from God and from human beings. Because now I remember sitting in that baseball field. And I remember when that happened to me. And I remember as they were laughing at me, what I did. I remember exactly what I did. I didn't cry even though I wanted to. I didn't run away even though I wanted to. What I did was I somehow, in some weird sort of way, made believe that I wasn't even there, that I was one of them. In other words, even though I felt horrible, I acted. I somehow in my mind had said, if they knew I felt bad, something terrible would happen. They would laugh even more at me. So what I did was I acted like it didn't bother me. I acted 100% opposite of the way I felt. So I, as they were laughing at me, I was sort of laughing at me. But it wasn't like me laughing at me. It was like me standing with them laughing at me. You understand what I'm saying? And so by doing that, I sort of like built a little wall, a little 3-inch wall between me and them, saying, you're going to never see how badly you just hurt me, because I'm going to build this little wall between you and me so you will never know what you did to me and how you hurt me. You'll never know that because I'll never let you see that. And how was I to know that little wall that I built between me and you so that you would never hurt me, you would never see inside of me, so that you could never hurt me, was by the time I was 18 or 20 years old, going to be 4 feet thick like concrete, and nobody was ever going to get in. It was going to separate me from you and God and make me feel like a moral leper, so that nobody would ever know me. And what's even worse is I stopped knowing me. I didn't even know why I did the stuff I did or why I felt the way I felt. As a matter of fact, most of the time, I didn't even know what I felt. I didn't even know whether I was mad or sad or glad or happy. And if I was, I didn't even know really why. And I'm trying to negotiate my way through life and figure out, I'm marrying this, and I'm taking this job, and I'm doing this, and I'm going here, and I'm going there. Mostly, I thought it's through logic, but it's through emotion, and because of the way I feel, and I don't even know why I'm doing this stuff. Because I got these walls built up with people all the time, and I'm walking into the room, and you know, all I'm thinking is, and I don't even know I'm thinking this, because my alcoholic life is the only normal one. Everywhere I'm going, all I'm thinking is, I don't want to be hurt. And it's like Muzak to me. I don't even realize I'm thinking I don't want to be hurt. But it's just playing in my mind. Don't hurt me. Don't hurt me. Don't hurt me. Don't hurt me. And so I walk into that bar, you know, and all I know is don't hurt me. Don't hurt me. I want to join the group. I want the group to like me, you know. I take a couple of shots of that stuff. I feel like I own the group. You know, I feel like all of a sudden I can mix. I need that stuff in order to even connect with you. And here's the thing. Even as I'm connecting with you, after I'm drinking that stuff, you're not even connecting with me because you're connecting with a drunk me. Not even a sober me. You don't even know what I'm like sober. But then again, I don't even know what I'm like sober. I'm really screwed up. And now I come in here and you take away the alcohol and like I'm okay. This ain't exactly Well People's Anonymous, you know. I mean, you got problems. So the bottom line is what I understand now. Now, I've been doing this for like 31 years. You know, and really profit by listening to newcomers, because sometimes I forget. You know, and this isn't a perfect thing with me. I don't know whether anybody does this perfectly, but sometimes I forget how lonely I felt. Now, I do remember late in the game when I was drinking, I would drink all by myself. Even if I was in a bar with 300 people, crowded around me, I might as well have been on the planet Mars. I was drinking by myself. I'm an alcoholic. I'm the only guy I know who can sit there drinking a bar with 300 people and feel like I'm all alone and nobody understands me. And I would go up to my room and I would sit there and play the phonograph over and over again, usually the same record, like A Pirate Looks at 40. Or I'm Mr. Blue, Only the Lonely, Rainy Days and Mondays, all that good stuff, you know what I mean? All that good alky stuff over and over and again, and drinking, and of course, I don't want you to think I was alone. I had all my imaginary friends with me. I think about my funeral. You were all there. Me too, you know what I mean? I was in the box, but I was always also by the tree, because I liked watching how people were so sad about how they treated me, you know, and things like all that morbid sort of stuff, you know, and I don't even realize, and that's when I was drinking, but you know, even after I'm drinking, I don't realize the loneliness, how disconnected I felt from people, how much I didn't trust people, how much I was scared of people and doing things, which is why alcoholics, a lot of alcoholics are basically, cowards, scared to raise their hands, scared to do a lot. Why can't I do that? Why can't I be that? Why can't I do that kind of thing? Why am I always running through my brain, what will they think about me? Guy says to me when I'm 15 years sober, I'm a grown man, I'm self-supporting through my own contributions. Nobody's paying my Visa card except for me. Would you like to go to a Bible study? First thing on my mind is, what will they think about me in AA? Why did I need AA's permission? Why do I have to worry? Why do I run everything through the filter? What will they think about me? As if they think about me. Why do I have to leave? Why do I have to lead a life from beginning to end, so where I'm on a deathbed and I haven't even lived my life because I've been living the life that I thought some imaginary group thought I should lead in order to get their approval, and they're not even thinking about me. Why am I walking around saying, why did I say that? Just believing that everybody's thinking about what I said or what I didn't say, or, why didn't I do it this way? Why am I always second guessing myself? And I don't even recognize, it gets to the point where I don't even recognize what the feeling of loneliness is. I'm walking around lonely, disconnected, not able to connect with another human being. No wonder we have so many divorces and everything like that. And not even let people in to know me. I can't even have a real true connection with somebody. And I don't even know that I'm feeling that way because it's just the way I feel. It's just the way I feel. I start doing this stuff. I got to start getting into this stuff. I start piercing that veil. I start doing what they talk about I start doing a fifth step. I start talking to one other human being. One human being. Listen, what is the fifth step? It's about, when you think about it, you take a fourth step and you do those lists where you dissect by direction certain things about yourself. You just don't have free thinking about yourself. We don't want to know how you feel. We don't want to know what your thoughts are. We don't want to know your opinions. We don't ask you stuff like that. We don't sit down and say, tell me about your life. You'll go on for 3 weeks with that, with a bottle of scotch. You know what I mean? We don't care. We ask you questions like, who do you resent? Why do you resent them? What does this affect? Okay, forgetting all that. Where did you do that? We ask you specific questions about yourself. Answer the questions. We're just interested in those questions. Those are the only questions. What is the fifth step about? It's about what? For the first time in your life, sitting down with another human being talking about you, who you really are. You got to make a bloody list. Listen, we got to sit you down, pin you to the ground, put hot coals under your feet, threaten to kill you, threaten you with booze, threaten you that you're going to drink, tell you you're a banana, you're going to die if you don't do it, in order to force you to write down and go into and write down stuff about yourself because you don't want to do it. You want to say, oh, no, I know about myself. It's all my brain. And their brain is the one that's screwing you up. It's that building walls. And then finally, after a whole lot of gnashing of teeth and struggling and everything, we finally get you to write it down. And then we've got to almost force you. We've got to put a step on the wall. We got to drag it out. We got to put it in writing and say, now you're going to talk to another human being. Pick somebody up. And people balk at that. Why do they balk at that? Because they've never done it before. Because it's a form of communication with another human being, just one person that you pick up that you've never done before. And so you're scared to do it because it deflates your ego. Now, you know what that should indicate to you? That should indicate to you that if you're scared to do that, because all you're doing is talking to another human being you trust about yourself, right? If you're scared to do it, how about this? Probably that's because at 30, 40, and 50 years old, it's probably because you've never done it before. Now, how's that? Because if you had done it before, if you had communicated with another human being before like that, not only would you need to do it, it would be easy for you. But this stuff is tough. Communicating with another human being who you trust about what's really going on inside of yourself, it's like a big deal. It's the fifth step. It's a big deal. You know why? Because I'm 40 years old and I've never done that before. Never did it with my wife. Never did it with my father. Never did it with my mother. Never did it with anybody. That's the first clue that you kind of screwed up. Don't you think? And you know what? Now get this, get this. How about this? It gets even better than that. How about this? We call it the fifth step. And it's important. And it continues. But how about this? I'm thinking that it's a spiritual exercise because maybe you're supposed to be able to communicate that way about what's going on inside of you from now on. I'm thinking it's like, you ready for this? A way of life. How about that deal? Like a way of life. How about developing, you know what it says? God will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. It says that in the back of the book. How about developing a fellowship around you, a group of men or a group of women or maybe men and women around you where you can actually sit down and talk about stuff that's really scaring you, stuff that's really bothering you, stuff that's really going on inside of you without being like I was in the football field, worried about them hurting you or worried about any of that stuff, just being honest with people. You know, how about this? If that could happen, I mean, if it could happen, I mean, I know it's probably impossible, but if it could happen, okay, I'll bet you wouldn't be tortured by loneliness. You see, it says right here, it says almost without exception, alcoholics are tortured by loneliness. I'll bet you wouldn't be tortured by loneliness. I'll bet you wouldn't feel alone. I'll bet if you didn't feel alone all the time and you felt connected, that somehow, and I don't know why, maybe that's because God invented us, I think you'd probably be able to have a true and honest communication with God and be able to be closer to Him. Because I think He wants to be in an honest relationship with you. He's righteous. He doesn't want a dishonest relationship with you. And if you could have that thing going, you know, because God is like big. It says in the big book, I mean, this is me. It says He's all being all powerful. That's what it says. It says right here, I'm not making this stuff up. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all powerful, He provided what we needed if we kept close to Him and performed His work well. Yeah, remarkable things happen to you. I'll bet if you could have this connection with God and this connection with other people, since He's all powerful and He's everywhere, you would probably not feel lonely like in your car by yourself. You would not even feel lonely like if you're in your house by yourself. Which means you wouldn't have to go sneaking around to those titty bars, guys. Or run around all over to strange places looking for, you know, crazy people to associate with because you feel so lonely. I'll bet your life would go better. You'd probably associate with better people. I mean, it's a possibility. I'm just thinking out loud to here, you know. I haven't worked this thing out totally, you know, but I'm thinking that's the way it sort of works. And then you know what it says right here at the end of the fifth chapter? Because as I said, with all these steps, I always think God has something to do with it. I'm not sure how it is. At the end of chapter six, it says the following. Right here. You know, I'm thinking about it. You know, I read these things and I try to be honest because I think honesty is important, don't you? Doesn't it say in the book something about capacity to be honest? Does it say that? The only requirement is that, you know, and the people that don't make it don't have the capacity to be honest, right? Remember what Dr. Bob said in the last statement? He says, if you're an atheist, an agnostic, have some other form of intellectual pride that keeps you what's going on in this book, I feel sorry for you. Your Heavenly Father will never let you down. Well, this is the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. This isn't me. This is my opinion. This is the big book. You know, you want to blank out the words? You know my old spiritual axiom, the A spiritual axiom. Whenever an alcoholic hears, sees, or is told somebody doesn't like it, disturbs him. You know, he gets mad at it, and it confuses him. So you don't have to get confused at this. You just listen to the words. Here's what the word says. It says right here, and into action, it says, let me see whether I can find it.
Uh-oh.
That's... I hate when that happens.
It's already started.
What?
Can't find it.
I can't find it, yeah. Let me find it. It's here somewhere.
There's
one. Okay, here. There's it. Okay. They talk about doing the fifth step, and then they say this right after we're done with the fifth step, okay? It says this. We pocket our pride and go at it, and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of our past. Because when we do this, why are we doing this? To get rid of guilt, that's a possibility. It'll probably all happen. But we're doing this, remember, because we're trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator. You understand? That's why we're doing it. That's the goal. Once we have taken this step withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator, with a capital C. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. We thank God from the bottom of our hearts that we know Him better. I'm not making this stuff up. You don't have to like it. You can walk out and say, I don't believe in it and I don't agree with it. But you're not disagreeing with me. You understand? You're not disagreeing with me. This ain't my program. I didn't make up this program. I didn't write this book. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. Carefully reading the first five proposals, we ask if we have omitted anything. For we're building an arch through which we shall walk, a free man. We're building an arch. Remember when the arch came in before? The arch came, the archway that to freedom came in the third step, where it says, in the third step, this is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereinafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are His children. He is the Father. He is the agent. He is the Father. We are His children. Most good ideas are simple. And this concept was the keystone in the new and triumphant arch through which we pass to freedom. Same thing. It's consistent throughout the entire book. It's all about building a relationship with God. That's the archway through freedom. You do that, you're going to walk through. Remarkable things are going to happen. You're going to be amazed before you're halfway done. You're going to be able to communicate with Him. You're going to be able to communicate with other people. You know, all this, all the promises will happen to you. It's all about this deal. By sitting down and doing the fifth step and going to another human being and getting it done. You know, I'm not going to tell you how. You know, you can read the book and find out how to do it. I can tell you this. Don't do it with your wife or husband. Nah. Don't do that, you know. You know, every once in a while you'll feel like real, I don't know, you get real excited about this, real exuberant. Like I was one day and I was, I don't know whether I was a couple years sober or whatever it is, and I said, well, now that I'm exuberant around this and I want to know, I thought I'd share with my wife. Yeah, you know, here comes the pain, you know. I told her, she said, you look concerned, honey, what's the problem? I said, well, I'm worried. He says, why are you worried? He says, well, honey, you know, I don't know, we don't have enough money maybe to pay the mortgage this month. And she said, she looked at me, and she said, well, that's because you're stupid. Well, that's probably why in the big book it says, share with a trusted friend. You probably don't want to lay all your stuff off on somebody that has to rely on you, you know, or has a you know, you understand, who's connected with you. You know, one of the great things about being a sponsor and sponsoring people is you can tell me all sorts of stuff about yourself. It doesn't affect, I mean, I hate to say it this way, except for the fact that I love you and I want to try to help you and I want to try to do the best I can. You're like not affecting me. You know, the fact that you don't have enough money to pay your mortgage doesn't mean that I'm going to be living in the street. You understand what I'm saying? So somehow, I mean, it's just true. Somehow I can look at it a little bit differently, okay, than your wife can. So you got to give her like a little bit of a pass. You know what I'm talking about? And now I will tell you this before we leave. I happen to do my fifth step with a psychiatrist. Now, I'm not saying that's right, wrong, or indifferent. It just is what it is. Now, the reason I say that is because I went to a meeting one day, it's a true story, it was at my old group, the Killing Pines group, and a guy in the group, we're passing around the group saying, how do you do the fifth step, or talking about the fifth step, and this guy said this, he said, well, I'll tell you one thing, I don't know much about it, but you sure as hell can't do it with a psychiatrist. That's what he just said, he just made a, you know, just an alcoholic talking, just a guy, I'm the next guy to speak. I did it with a psychiatrist. He says, I know one thing, you can't do it with a psychiatrist. Now, of course, at that time I had about, I don't know, a few years, so all I did was develop a resentment. I didn't even know how to handle that. I was just mad, you know, because I took it personally. But, you know, that's because I didn't know the book well enough. I didn't realize, I didn't think about it, that in the book it says, perhaps our doctor or psychologist. It says, perhaps our doctor or psychologist. So what I'm saying to you is we all have crazy ideas as to who you can do it with and who you can't do with it. Before you check on these crazy ideas, why don't you read the book? Read the book. It gives you some good ideas. I've had guys come up to me and say, can I do my fifth step with you? And I say, sure. I'll say, fine. I'll say, but why don't you do it with my sponsor? And he'll say to me, my sponsor says you can't do it with a sponsor. It's like a made-up thing, you know? It's just like just sort of making it up as they go along. I'm not putting down sponsors. Maybe they have reasons for saying that. Maybe they wanted to share it with somebody. I don't know. But it doesn't say in the big book you can't. It doesn't say you can't do it with your sponsor. You know, personally, I can't think of anybody better to do it with. I didn't do it with my sponsor. I did it with a psychologist. It says, you know, a trusted friend. It even says you can talk to a couple of people, okay? But the point is to go ahead and do it. Because the more you do it and the more you're having honest communications with people, the more you're able to honestly share with other people, and you get discernment in this. You know who to share with and who not to share with. Now, I will tell you this before we leave. I, as you know, you guys may know this. I think I've shared it before. I'm a very big believer in fellowship, big time believer in fellowship. If I sponsor somebody, I get involved in somebody, sponsees, grand sponsees, whatever they are, we have a lunch list of a bunch of guys, like 70 guys. And every day, almost every day, 70 guys get a notification, a text notification, where we're having lunch. Now, we don't get 70. If they all showed up at once, we'd be in big trouble. But we get anywhere from 6 to 12 guys showing up every day wherever we're having lunch. And we're talking. And I remember one guy from one of our church that I know said, you do this every day? I say, sure. He says, every day? I says, well, we eat lunch every day. Yeah, we do it every day. You know, we believe in eating lunch together. We believe in eating dinner together. We believe in congregating together, because I personally believe that it's important to put people in positions where they're constantly over a dinner table or a lunch table listening to other people share, talking about themselves and everything like that, so they can open up. Because believe me, you know what they say, if you hang around a barbershop, eventually you're going to get a haircut. You hang around 5 or 6 or 7 guys, eventually you're going to fess up. You're going to say something, especially with the guys I hang out with. Because they won't, you know, James, no, because they won't let you shut up. They'll pound on you until the truth comes out, you know, they'll waterboard you. They'll waterboard you until you start talking. So when it says God will help you create the fellowship you crave, who did we used to hang around with? We used to hang around with our best friends that made us feel like shit. We used to hang around. Here's the people we used to hang around with. You know how many times I get this? How many times I've heard this over the last 31 years? Some gal or some guy comes up to me and says, I'm really upset. I say, why? Susie, you know, my friend, told me the other day, she said, do you know what Joe said about you? Now, I want you to understand, we hang around with people that come up to us and say, do you know what they were saying about you? Now, let me explain something to you. And here's what we think. We get mad at the people they're talking about when we realize, really, the snake in the grass, our worst enemy, is the person that came up to us and said, do you know what Joe said about it? Because, you see, that person should know, like you know, there's absolutely nothing you can do about that. And all it's going to do is crush your heart and make you feel horrible. Whereas a real friend... let me tell you what a real friend does, okay? Because alcoholics don't know how to be a real friend. This is what a real friend does. If somebody comes up to me and says, you know, Paul was a real idiot or something like that, or whatever they say, you know, I say, let me tell you something. Paul's a friend of mine, and he's a good guy, and I like Paul. And you want to know something? If you have something bad to say about Paul, why don't you say it to his face instead of being a coward? Don't be talking to me about it, because he's my friend. You got it? And they say they got it. And you know something? I don't say anything to Paul. I don't have to say anything to Paul because I've already said what I have to say, because you know why? I'm a friend of Paul. Why would I hurt his feelings with that crap? But you know what alcoholics do? We hang around the other type of people. We hang around the toxic people and we call them our best friends, our buddies. That's the kind of people we hang with. We don't know the difference between good and bad. And a person that really cares about us and loves about us. We don't get it. 30, 40, 50 years old, we don't get it. That's part of the fifth step. We start learning what it is to actually trust somebody and have somebody who really has our best interests at heart. Sometimes the people that have our best interests at heart tell us things that kind of hurt our feelings, you know what I mean? But it sort of sets us straight. And sometimes the people that are patting us on the back, or telling us stuff that, you know, we're curious about that, you know, really bother. Sometimes those people are like the worst people to hang around. We learn all this stuff through the fifth step. So thank you very much. Next week we'll talk about stuff.